The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dann. This is the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk, where it's been a big week for all things digital. The chief exec of Digital Radio UK, Ford Ennals, has called the launch event of the new multiplex our own Super Tuesday, and he's here to tell us more. David Lloyd has some more radio moments, and Stuart Clarkson's here with the latest radio news. But first, to the Drive to Digital event, which featured John Whittingdale, the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, and a host of radio luminaries celebrating the launch of Sound Digital, the new national multiplex known for so long simply as D2. 18 new stations are on air or about to be, and it's another milestone on the road to an all-digital future. Afterwards, Ford Ennals was glowing.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Trevor, I would say it was an extraordinary day yesterday. It was a real moment for digital radio and indeed for the radio sector. We had a coming together of, you know, the commercial radio groups as well as the BBC, big stations, small stations. And what we were doing was celebrating the launch of sort of effectively 18 new stations on the Sound Digital multiplex, but also celebrating the fact that there are now over 40 national stations on DAB, which is really exciting, and over 300 stations on DAB across the UK. So in numbers terms, what we've got now is a really compelling content proposition. And to be honest, we've been waiting for this moment for a long time, but it's here now.
How many people are listening to digital radio at the moment, Ford?
Well, there's, according to Radio, over 30 million people listen every week to digital radio, and over 20 million people are listening to DAB. And that actually compares very well with, if you look at the numbers of people listening to Freeview and Sky. So this is a really well-established, popular platform, and those numbers are only going to grow.
We've said, haven't we, over many years, that it's new stations, it's new content that will make DAB more popular. So I guess that's why you must be very pleased with the launch of D2.
We're absolutely excited. I think, you know, once again, we had an event yesterday and you felt that excitement across the room, because I think what is true now is that we have that real critical mass in terms of the numbers of listeners, the amount of people who have DAB digital radios in their homes, the amount of DAB radios now in cars. So what it does mean is when stations launch on DAB platforms, that they actually can build an audience very, very quickly. As long as the content is great, as long as the broadcasting is great, you know, they can build an audience very quickly. And I think that's what's brought all these stations to be on Sound Digital. And I think that's why we're also seeing a clamour for, we've got now 85 stations on the small-scale DAB trial as well. So there's a lot of people wanting to get content on air because they believe for the first time on digital radio that they can build audiences quickly.
The Secretary of State made a very upbeat speech, and you'd expect that. What was he saying to you, as it were, off-air, behind the scenes?
You know, it was great to have John Whittingdale with us yesterday, and, you know, I think it was fitting that he got to do the official switch on. I think what a lot of people learned about him that they didn't know was that he's a real rock fan. He knows his rock. He talked about Black Sabbath and Deep Purple and Quo and AC/DC. He unveiled and revealed to us that he was going to the Download Festival this year, which is pretty hardcore metal music. So, you know, he's a real fan. And I think that's great news for the sector to have a Secretary of State, you know, who does love music, loves rock music and loves radio. Because too often we hear politicians talk about listening to the Today Show, but not much else. And so we heard a different picture from John yesterday. But on the policy stuff, what he said was, you know, the future for radio, like so many other mediums, is digital. Government has been very happy that they played a role in terms of investment, in terms of the local DAB coverage build-out, the small-scale trial we've seen. And also it was Ed Vasey 3 years ago who called for the launch of the D2 network. So I think DCMS kind of feel that they've played an active role and they're really pleased with the progress we're making.
Do you think that digital radio listening is going to eat itself? In other words, the number of listeners now, is it going to go up, or are the digital radio listeners already simply going to listen to more stations?
Well, you know, Trevor, what we're seeing is, you know, ownership of DAB digital radios continues to increase sort of 10% annually. So 54% of homes have got them, but, you know, 46% of homes don't. You know, we still have many cars that don't have digital radio in. 80% of them have them as new. But what hasn't happened yet, we haven't been able to convert those existing cars to digital radio. And I think that's where the focus is going to go, is to get people who don't have them in their homes and their cars to get digital radio. And I'm absolutely convinced that we'll see digital radio listening increase. I mean, if you take London or if you take in home, digital listening is already greater than analog listening. And over time, we'll see that happen in the next couple of years across the nation. But what we do see, though, is that people who have digital radio listen to more radio and they listen to more stations. And I think that's really, really healthy. And I think that's something that's helping overall radio listening. And we heard from Dee Ford yesterday, who said that, you know, really the shift to digital has really allowed commercial radio to compete on an even playing field. And that's why, perhaps for the first time in a long, long time, radio shows that there are more people listening to commercial radio than BBC.
Ford, how do you react to the continuing criticism that the DAB signal is simply not good enough, that too often it's mono, that it's a very low bit rate because of the lack of bandwidth, even with the arrival of D2? What do you say to people who say, you know, we were promised CD quality and we really don't have it?
Well, you know, Joe, I mean, there's a couple of things about DAB reception and coverage. I mean, quite rightly, for many years, people did complain that, you know, it was unreliable as a signal. It wasn't strong enough as a signal. It just didn't exist in some areas. And I think we've made huge progress on that in terms of building the BBC national DAB network out to 97%. The local DAB coverage is built out today to 80%, but it'll be 91%, which will be the same as FM commercial coverage by the end of this year. So that's great progress. And also in big areas, big urban areas, the signal's been increased and it's much more robust. So I think people can count on DAB now in a way they couldn't before. In terms of the quality of sound, I mean, you know, all the work that Ofcom and the BBC and anyone else who does consumer research does suggests that people believe that the sound quality is very, very good. And, you know, we get over 90% of comments in terms of positive about sound quality. So the issue about sound quality isn't about the DAB platform, I don't believe. I do believe that there's an issue in terms of capacity. And sometimes because of the capacity constraints that exist, you know, particularly nationally, you know, people have made decisions to, in favor of choice as opposed to, you know, if you like, having high kilobits and potentially, you know, higher quality sound. At the end of the day, that's something for the broadcasters to decide.
So what's the answer to that, Ford? Let me, if I may interrupt you, do we need D3?
Ultimately, I do think there's two things. I mean, I do think, you know, we will need more capacity over time. But I do think that the advent of DAB Plus, I think, does provide a really positive opportunity here. As you know, it's much more efficient. It allows you to deliver a good quality stereo sound at much lower kilobit rates. And I do think it's very interesting to see these three national stations who have now launched nationally on DAB+. And I think over time, that could actually enable us to maintain the choice but upgrade the sound quality.
Would you be saying to somebody who's still not got a DAB set, now is the time to make sure that the one you buy is DAB Plus compatible?
Well, what I would say, I mean, in fact, what our campaign on air is saying at the moment is there's never been a better time to listen to digital radio or to buy a digital radio. And, you know, the vast majority of digital radios you buy now all have DAB Plus in them. And so I absolutely would say if you're buying a radio, make sure it's a digital radio. And if you're buying a digital radio, make sure it's got DAB+. And the way to check on that is to look for the digital tick. And part of this digital tick standard we've now got in place is that you have to have DAB+ in the radio.
And final question, Ford, you know it's coming. How near are we now to FM switch-off?
Well, Trevor, I remember we talked back in 2013 after the minister had made his statement that we weren't ready to set a timetable to switch over, but we were ready to push on. And so it's pleasing to talk to you 3 years later and to be able to talk about the progress in terms of coverage and content and cars. What we heard from government yesterday was a restatement that these criteria that they've set are very important. Coverage and listing criteria, by the end of 2016, will have hit the coverage criteria. Within 2 years, we'd expect to have hit the listening criteria of 50%. And then government have said that they will review, make a decision and set a timetable. So I think it's a few years away, but we're making progress. Those criteria are going to be achieved. And I think what's the good news is, because we've taken longer to do this, what it has done is brought the industry together, both small stations and big stations, and both national and local stations. And I think, you know, when we get to a point of a transition, I think the industry will be ready.
Ford Ennals, thank you for talking to the Radio Today programme.
You're very welcome, Trevor. Good to talk to you.
Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
This week's news now from Stuart Clarkson.
Thanks, Trevor. Another really busy week in radio. As we've been hearing, D2 is here as the second national DAB multiplex was launched this week. Lots of stations now live and more to come over the next few weeks as Talk Radio, TalkSport 2, Virgin Radio and two new Magic branded stations are among those preparing to begin programmes. Speaking of which, Fran Godfrey, ex of Radio 2, will do the breakfast show on Mellow Magic, followed by Paul Hayes, Patsy Kensett, Gary Vincent and Arlene Stewart. Lynn Parsons is also joining Bauer to host the weeknight Mellow Magic show on the main Magic station, and that Magic station's also signed Mel Giedroyc for Saturday lunchtimes. Local DAB trials that were due to run until May are now being extended by Ofcom for a further 2 years. The 10 multiplexes given licences went on air last summer in Bristol, Manchester, Portsmouth, London, Cambridge, Aldershot, Brighton, Norfolk, Glasgow and Birmingham. Wireless Group is back this week. It's the new name for the group we previously knew as UTV. The owners of TalkSport and local stations including Signal, Pulse and The Wave have changed identity following the sale of UTV Television to ITV. And Mark Goodyear did his first Pick of the Pops on Radio 2 at the weekend. He's been booked for 4 weeks initially, we hear, following Tony Blackburn's removal from his BBC shows. In case you missed that big story last week, Tony is, of course, suing the corporation for sacking him over his evidence that he gave to the Dame Janet Smith Review. And you can catch up on all the fallout from that at radiotoday.co.uk. Don't forget, too, you can get radio industry news on the hour 24/7 on the new online station In Radio. That's it for now. I'm Stuart Clarkson.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Radio Moments. Radio Moments.
This week in 1944, the BBC Forces Programme became the BBC General Forces Programme.
This is the General Forces Programme presenting Radio Newsreel.
And the BBC distanced itself from its Reithian values and tried to create a faster, more entertaining service for the Americans, who weren't particularly impressed with the corporation's style.
All we know is that we're happy to welcome that man again.
Ahoy there! Oh, hello, George!
And I'll do you there, sir.
Music While You Work was played this morning by Jimmy Leach and his organolians.
Famous programmes aired on the General Forces programme, paving the way for the Light programme and eventually the Radio 2 we know and love today. Happy birthday this week to one of radio's most famous sick tunes. Yes, it's In the Party Mood, which heralded Housewives' Choice. It arrived this week in 1946.
And round the corner I am. Good morning. It's funny how reticent some people are to give names, whereas others literally fill their postcards with full details of 200 or 300 people they'd like mentioned. At 37 Atherley Road, Shanklin, in the Isle of Wight, lives Mrs. D. Walker. She has a daughter whose home is The Nook, Avenue Road, Shanklin. Well, I'd like to be able to tell you the daughter's name. I'd like to blaze...
Marking the launch of Housewives' Choice this week in 1946 on the BBC Light programme. It lasted 21 years. In 1992 this week, Radio 3 waved farewell to its AM frequencies.
BBC Radio 3 on VHF and on 1215 kHz, 247 metres medium wave.
It handed over the famous 247 metres, which had been the launch home for Radio 1 before being occupied by Radio 3, to commercial radio. This week, 8 years ago, Chris Carey, Spangles Muldoon, died. He jumped on board Radio Caroline as it went illegal in 1967.
Skeeter Davis until the end of the world, or the end of the world. That came out at the same time as I got my first flat. I left home at 15 and I used to earn about £2, 15 shillings a week to survive on. And I wanted to go it alone, so I got myself a flat and a job and all the rest of the things, and I ended up as a disc jockey and a discotheque as well, and a bingo caller, to make ends meet, because it meant that if...
Chris Carey, who died this week in 2008. He'd been affectionately on the edge of UK radio for some time, had Nova, Luxie and R&I, Caroline as well, and he bought Buzz FM for a pound. Lynx FM cost a little more than a pound to set up, £500,000 as I recall. It launched this week, 24 years ago.
This is Lynx FM.
The news at 2 minutes past ten. I'm Claire Carson.
I was incredibly nervous, but I would never have admitted it at the time. I just remember being... It was like a bit of an out-of-body experience, being like a goldfish in a bowl, because the news booth is in between the two studios. And all around, I could see people crawling all over the building like ants.
Out-of-body experiences for goldfish and ants. Lynx FM launching this week in 1992. Simon Mayo debuted on radio in the East Midlands, but this week in 86, he moved further south.
Simon Mayo through till 3 o'clock today, and Gary did say, please make your bit in the middle as much like mine as possible, except not quite as brown.
Mayo's first Radio 1 moment this week, exactly 30 years ago. She's 60 this week, and she's high up at the BBC.
And in audience terms, the appreciation and actually the amount of people consuming BBC programmes and content is as good as it's ever been, if not better. We're in fighting form because we try really hard to keep connected with our audience.
Helen Bowden, 60 this week. She was part of the early teams at Tees and Air through BBC Local and then upwards at the BBC. It's 26 years since Jazz FM launched. It was the first new London commercial station after the original pair. Diana Luke was on air, and she remembers the role Ella Fitzgerald played on day one.
She was playing at the Grosvenor in London, and I had to introduce her with Paul Jones. And so I had to buy a posh frock, but I had these stiletto heels on, and I was very, very tall. But then we got backstage, and I was talking away with the orchestra, as you do, because I was very excited. And it was time to go out, and I thought, I'm dragging my foot a bit here, and I couldn't quite know what was going on. What had happened, some of the electrical tape, you know, the gaffer tape, had adhered itself to the back of my heel. Oh. And I was dragging this great roll of gaffer tape out onto stage to see Ella.
Memories of the launch of Jazz FM this week in 1990. So with Chilton Radio extending to Bedford 34 years ago.
The number one station in hearts, beds and bugs.
Trent launching a Derbyshire sister 29 years ago.
Well, thank you, Radio Trent, for the signal honour you do me.
The BBC's so-called Scud FM ending 25 years ago.
This is Radio 4 News FM.
And James Well ending his stint at LBC 3 years ago.
First, let me ask you this question.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
David Lloyd, Stuart Clarkson and Ford Ennals join the credits this week with researcher Hayley Hayes. This has been a TDC production for Radio Today. Join me again next week, and in the meantime, keep in touch via In Radio, the online radio channel for radio people. Thanks for listening. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.